My commentary in a moment. But first, surely I am not the only one who covers their ears when the liberal Democrat Jessica Tarlov speaks on Fox News. It's not so much her liberal views that concern me, but the sound of her voice. She sounds like somebody has sandpapered her tonsils. You can always rely on her liberal stance and defense of the undefensible Democrats like Joe Biden. But the screech is a turnoff. Another thing I learned recently is that Donna Brazile and the mayor of Washington, D.C. are thicker than peas in a pod. They have been labeled an item by news sources. Apparently, Brazile and the D.C. mayor don't just love Democrats. They love one another. Why Fox News brings Donna Brazile on to spread her bovine residue is beyond me. The woman has been proven to be dishonest and a liar. When, as head of the DNC, she provided the Hillary Clinton campaign with the questions that were to be asked in her debate with Donald Trump, Brazile swore that it was not true. She didn't do it. And she stuck to that false claim like an oyster to its shell. Finally, when the evidence was overwhelming, Brazile admitted her dishonesty and her lies to cover it up. Get her riled up on camera, and we see, as we saw recently, that she will use the GD word against whoever she wants to dismiss. Rupert Murdoch is long in the tooth these days and has allowed his offspring to take Fox News more to the left. That has gotten us Jessica Tarlov and Donna Brazile, among others. And NASCAR just banned the Confederate flag from all events. I don't have a Confederate flag, and I've never had one. I can see where it might offend some people with its history of division, but allowing a car to paint Black Lives Matter on it in the race offends others. Not because black lives don't matter, but because it is meant divisively. Moreover, flying a Black Lives Matter flag beneath the American flag at the racetrack is uncalled for. This is an automobile race, not a place for political messages. If allowed, and it has been allowed by NASCAR, what's to stop another driver from painting a message on his car that does not belong on a racetrack? And that leads me to my message today. I incorporate research and comments from Michael Snyder of Investment Watch Blog with my commentary today. I'm going to say today what many people feel but are afraid to speak out for fear of being branded a racist. I will draw fire from militant blacks and whites who do not want there to be honest discussions about race in America. What I will say is truthful and said well-intentioned. There is no doubt that America is totally out of control. On Tuesday, June 9th, the George Floyd funerals were over. He was finally laid to rest in a gold coffin. That poor man had been drugged all over the country for ceremony after ceremony, where divisive rhetoric further pushed our people apart. I've never been one to shy away from speaking the truth. And I realize that the country is so on edge that the slightest word that can be used against someone speaking out can lead to calls of racism and even loss of jobs. After 55-plus years in journalism, I'm quasi-retired and not dependent upon a paycheck, and so calling for me to lose my job will be an echo that will just echo and echo and echo. What I will say today needs to be said, and all of us blacks and whites need to hear it. But hear it without a defensive posture, without hate in your heart. The death of George Floyd under the knee of a rogue policeman in Minneapolis was a travesty of justice. No rational person can excuse what these officers did, and they will now pay the price for those actions in a court of law. In America, that's where we go to seek justice, not on the streets, not day after day. The initial shock and protests were understandable. We were all with those who demanded justice and police reform. But then the protests turned violent. Fires were purposely set, stores looted, people assaulted. Some innocent people trying to protect their property and livelihood were killed, including black. Those who were well-meaning, peaceful protesters continued to march while the anarchists hid among them. The marchers were unwittingly providing cover for the purveyors of violence. When a protester who sets out to be peaceful finds themselves among looters and rioters, common sense says, get away from there. As the violence mounted, the support for the protesters across the country began to waver. All of us still are angry about the senseless killing of George Floyd, and we remain committed to seeking justice in his case. But as the days wear on and the marches continue, more and more people begin to say, that is enough. Far from bringing people of all races together, these actions and hateful rhetoric began to turn people off. The lionization of George Floyd, making him a hero, was over the top. George Floyd was a criminal with a long rap sheet, which included him robbing and allegedly raping a pregnant woman at gunpoint in Texas. That, my friends, was criminal brutality. Simply portraying Mr. Floyd as a man who suffered indignity and death at the hands of a rogue cop would have been more readily accepted. He is no hero, but he was a victim of police brutality. And regardless of how long his rap sheet is, he did not deserve to die as he did. No human being deserves that. The only good news in all of this is that George Floyd's murder served as a catalyst for real change in policing in our country. And that is long overdue. We should all fully support it. Predictably, Joe Biden, who pushed through a harsh crime bill under Bill Clinton that saw many more black people incarcerated, used one of the several funerals as a photo op and political posturing. Biden pre-recorded a video to be played at one of the ceremonies instead of showing up there. Rather than exhibit heartfelt concern for the victim, Biden very carefully read a teleprompter to keep his gaffes from coming back to haunt him. But the occasions were further hijacked by America's number one race hustler, Al Sharpton. Bringing this racist flamethrower into the funerals was predictable. Sharpton used his time on the public stage to play politics, to attack President Trump again and again, and to incite continued hate against white people. It was a time for healing wounds, not lancing them further open. Angry Al even used his time in the spotlight at a funeral to demand that Colin Kaepernick be rehired by the NFL. Kaepernick was the black man who dishonored our flag by taking a knee while the national anthem was played before games. Kaepernick made it clear that he does not care much for the United States And football fans then made it clear that they don't care much for him. Any team owner with Kaepernick on his squad faced fan boycotts. But what was Al Sharpton doing by bringing Kaepernick's name into the service in the first place? The funeral service was to remember the injustice that took George Floyd's life, not for angry Al to further divide the races. This little spiteful man has done more to set back race relations than anyone in the past 50 years, except perhaps for Louis Farrakhan. Why trot Sharpton out to these occasions? The man is irrelevant. And he takes those occasions to get himself onto television as if he is a healer. But Al Sharpton is no healer. He is an unrepentant race hustler whose livelihood depends upon keeping the races at each other's throats. That is how the man makes a living. So, what is the purpose of continuing the protest marches day after day, blocking streets and highways? The death of George Floyd has captured the attention of the entire country, indeed the whole world, and change is already underway. Meaningful change that, frankly, should have been implemented decades ago. Joe Biden was in Congress for 30 years, and Barack Hussein Obama's vice president for 8 years. Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House, and Democrats controlled the White House and both houses of Congress for years while Obama-Biden's administration was in power. Why then was nothing done about police brutality in all that time? Barack Hussein Obama was hailed as America's first black president. But exactly what did he do for black America? What did he do about police brutality? For these deceitful people to place the blame on Donald Trump for Floyd's death is the height of hypocrisy. What we need now is not more protests, hate rhetoric, finger-pointing, or name-calling. We have all been reminded of the issues at hand. To continue protesting in the streets is counterproductive. Blocking streets and even interstates to prevent innocent people from going about their business earns the protesters nothing but unfavorable feelings. All police officers are not bad cops. All white people are not racists, and all black people are not racists. How is the continuing protests or desecrating of public streets with a message that we all can agree on, but which has no place on public property, unifying? Black lives certainly matter, and police brutality must be stopped. But God matters would never be allowed to be painted on public property. What happens when someone else wants to paint something on the public street, like support the KKK? As reprehensible as that is, it is free speech. And if we are to allow one message, we should allow all messages. Therefore, we should allow no defacing of public property. Racism in America is not a one-way street. It's time for all white people and black people to work together to confront real racism wherever we find it. Younger generations are not nearly as racist as some in older generations are, because if you're over 45 or 50, you lived in a much more segregated society. After so many years of slavery, freed blacks were considered to be inferior. Even the most well-meaning whites had been taught to consider black people to be less intelligent. Those lessons die hard. On the other hand, the government and so-called black leaders did little to prepare blacks for the future as a free people. The Democrats saw the need for black votes, and so they took the easy way out and made blacks dependent upon government handouts. So-called black leaders became wealthy by turning blacks against whites and whites against blacks. They continue that today, as witnessed by Al Sharpton's blatant displays at the Floyd funerals. White people have seen the country change for the better since the early 60s. Of course there are a lingering few, very few, racists left in the white community, but that's also true of the black community. We must continue to weed out those guilty of racism in any form, from any race. Predictably, liberal America saw this turmoil as an opportunity to overreact and demand the police be defunded. What a novel idea! Take away the only protection inner-city families have against the hoodlums, thieves, and drug dealers among them. I've been privileged to visit more than 80 foreign countries, and I can say in very good confidence that we in the United States have the least corrupt police departments of anywhere in the world. Our cops sometimes do horrible things, as the George Floyd video demonstrated. But here's what anyone living outside the United States already knows. In most third world countries, the only people with physical protection are the rich, who can afford private security guards for their families. The police in most third world countries are so corrupt that they are frequently in cahoots with traffickers. If a woman loses her husband in a third world country, there's a good chance that she and her children will be trafficked. In fact, the police will frequently make money from the traffickers. The number one threat to the poor people of the world is unchecked violence. You don't have to go to Cambodia to see that. All you have to do is cross the border to Mexico. Only families with security guards have protection there from kidnappings. The poor, of course, cannot afford security guards, so they are simply sitting ducks to become victims of murder, extortion, labor, slavery, and sex traffic. So when you hear liberal voices in the United States say, defund the police, they think they're making a statement that is pro-poor and anti-rich. But nothing could be further from the truth. If we defund the police in the United States, then we move to a private security state, which means that the rich can defend themselves with weapons and paid security. Then the poor become even more pronounced victims of poor-on-poor violence. We cannot deny that we have seen incidents of cops doing rough things on our streets, but we have the least corrupt law enforcement of any country I have visited, and I have visited many. If our coronavirus government overreach continues and or the government laxity in the face of these marches and riots continues, the cops will lose both the rich with legal weapons and the poor with illegal weapons. And then the poor will kill each other in greater numbers than now. A lot of people out there are so upset about police brutality that they are ready to support drastic measures like defunding the police instead of reforming law enforcement. Those who advocate for such an approach seem to believe that most people are inherently good, and that if the police were removed from the equation, that we could build a police-free utopia where we all join hands and sing Kumbaya. Yes, liberals do think that way. But there's just one huge problem with that. People are not inherently good. This has been true all throughout human history, and it is most definitely true today. Given the opportunity, there are a lot of people that will loot, burn, riot, and harm others without even feeling bad about the pain they're causing others. By nature, humanity is deeply selfish. and it has not been easy to organize us into civilized societies. In order for a society to be governed by the rule of law, a relatively high level of morality is required, and for much of American history, that morality held true. But many Americans have been raised in an environment where we have rejected the core values that once governed our society, and we are beginning to see the consequences, dire consequences. If you doubt this, just look at what happened to the city of Minneapolis, as well as others. Large areas of the city have been utterly destroyed, and the Minneapolis City Council has decided that the way they will fix things is to end policing as we know it. So, without the police, who's going to stop criminals from raping, looting, burning, and killing? You may think that if they come at you, you'll just gun them down. But what if the criminals greatly outnumber your family, and they have bigger guns than you do? A reporter for the L.A. Times asked a few of the looters why they were looting. In response, the looters truthfully admitted that we're doing it because we can. If heavily armed police officers had been stationed on every street corner, the looting would not have happened because there would have been no free opportunity zone for looters. But given the opportunity to indulge in selfish human nature, these looters gleefully grabbed it. Their mentality is, why wait till I can afford a big screen TV when I'm free to steal one? Down in Houston, rioters were actually filmed attacking a children's hospital. What an incredibly evil thing to do, and more evidence of how our society has decayed. If those young people had been raised in an environment of faith and morality, perhaps they would have turned out much differently. Unfortunately, we have been teaching our kids that good is evil and evil is good for decades. And so what is happening now should not be any sort of surprise. Taking the police off the streets will solve nothing. Instead, it will just give criminals a lot more opportunities to commit crimes. Unfortunately, liberal radicals are running many of our major cities now, and it looks like police budgets are about to be slashed all over the United States. If we want lots of civil unrest, that's the right path. In the end, the truth is that we need the police. Yes, police brutality is a major problem in this country, and I've been speaking about that for years in my commentaries. Police culture in the United States must change, because that is the only way that public faith in the police will be restored. But abandoning our communities to the criminals is not any sort of solution at all. Instead, it will just unleash a torrent of evil on our streets. We must also rise up and admit that the police face major obstacles that could be lessened with better education and control of young thugs who terrorize neighborhoods. There is such a thing as thug brutality, and it is practiced against the police every day in this country. If the rioters come to your neighborhood, the first thing many of you will do will be to pick up your phone and call the police. But if you live in one of the cities where the police will be disbanded, they soon won't be on the other end of that phone to answer you. Consider that as you hear the calls for defunding the police reach a crescendo pitch. It's hard anymore to decide what to talk about in my commentaries because there is so much to talk about. Who would have ever thought that we would be talking about defunding the police, doing away with the only thing standing between us and anarchy? In Seattle, anarchists of Antifa have seized a block, not just one block, about 10 blocks of the city. They have roped it off, and they are saying it's theirs and that nobody's allowed to come in. They're charging the businesses in those blocks for protection. In other words, if you give me some money, and I'll determine how much money, we won't let anybody break in, and certainly we won't break in ourselves. That's where we're coming to in our country. I know that some people downplay it, particularly if you're a liberal, because you think everything is good. You think we should all sit around singing Kumbaya by the campfire. But the campfire has gone out. Those sitting around that campfire don't want to sing Kumbaya. They want to take from somebody else, to blame somebody else for all of the things they're unable to do. They place no blame upon themselves. We've got to get out of this rut. How to do it is what we should be talking about. We don't need any more reminders that Black Lives Matter. We know they matter. We don't need any more reminders that we have police brutality in this country. We know we have police brutality in this country. So let's discuss what to do about it. And you can't do that on the streets, marching along with signs. You do that with dialogue that reaches the heart of the American people, that causes us to examine the way we think. Are we racist? Do we do anything that is racist? I can tell you that I don't consider myself a racist. I really don't. But I have to admit that if I see a black person, particularly young, wearing their pants down around their knees and coming at me with a scowl on their face, I get more concerned than I would if it was a white person, but not if they were dressed the same. Thank you for listening today. I'll be back again next week, God willing. Same time and same station.